And now we're overdue, somewhat long overdue, for a musical break. This is an old favorite, which we played before. I hate playing stuff again because you can find this on YouTube, but here it is. It's If You Ever Got Impeached, the musical section of Randy Rainbow's satirical commentary.
I don't know. I've always had controversy in my life, and I've always succeeded. I've always won.
Well, some say you're about to win, most likely to get impeached.
I'll tell you what. If I ever got impeached, I think the market would crash.
If you ever got impeached?
I think everybody would be very poor.
Why, if you ever got impeached, you would...
You would probably start crying, then rehash all the lying and rhetoric you've preached. All the Dems would be smirking. Jim Acosta would start twerking if you ever got impeached.
If I ever got impeached.
You could just give in to Mueller, then go and get some color by lying on a beach. This is all natural, right? With the crimes you've been fixing, you could be another Nixon if you only got impeached.
I think the market would crash.
You'd be through and take with you our worries and our strife. You'd return to only burdening your wife, and we'd resume a normal life. Find a lawyer, cause you'll need one. Write a book, or learn to read one, or get your eyebrows bleached, cause... Just relax at the spa, go fuck yourself at Mar-a-Lago when you, if you get impeached.
I don't know how you can impeach somebody who's done a great job.
You'd be more than implicated for laws you violated and protocols you breached.
Because without this thinking...
We could finally all stop drinking if you ever got impeached.
I think everybody would be very poor.
We would dance and sing and revel. No one else has hit the level of infamy you've reached. Giuliani could retire. Pence could join a gay men's choir if you ever get impeached.
The president did nothing wrong.
When you flee, take Huckabee. And finally I'll become. I'd ask Michael Avenatti to the prom, and Kellyanne could move to Guam. More than half the country's waiting, so think about the ratings. Cause when you gave your speech, we would all tune in to listen. You could finally go to prison.
I'm not involved. I wasn't charged with anything.
If you ever got impeached,
I think everybody would be very poor.
What would you do with a brain if you had one?
We cannot do it any longer. I am very underleveraged. I have a great company. I have a tremendous income. And the reason I say that is not in a braggadocious way. It's because...
Braggadocious? Is that even a word?
I don't know. Maybe. Who knows?
Super callous, fragile, egocentric, braggadocious. Likes to throw big words around and hopes that we all notice. If he keeps repeating them, they might just make him POTUS. Super careless, fragile, ego, extra braggadocious. Are you really gonna vote for this guy? You're really gonna vote for this guy? Are you really gonna vote for this guy? Are you really gonna vote for this guy? He says that he's the man and thinks he's got the Midas touch. But does he have a plan to fix the country?
Not so much.
And if you're not convinced by all of that hyperbole, he says shut up, just buy a stupid hat and vote for me. Hey, super careless, fragile, that's why Hillary's relaxed. This time Bill Clinton might as well sit back and play the saxes. Wife erased her emails and now Trump wants total access. Then once hell has frozen over, he'll release his taxes. Are you really gonna vote for this guy? 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 He found a word that sounded smart and used it all day long, but even Webster's dictionary said he got it wrong. So if you're undecided or you hate the other sex, remember in November how he likes to sign his checks. It's super sleazy, fabricating, sexist and obnoxious. Even just the thought of voting for him makes me nauseous. If you like America, you'll keep him out of office. Superficial, chauvinistic, arrogant and thoughtless. Are you really gonna vote for this guy? Who the hell's gonna vote for this guy? Of course you can say it backwards, which is docious, braggocentric, ego, fragic, callous, stupid.
Did you ask me a question?
Nope, I didn't say anything.
So when his words escape him and he hasn't got a prayer, he's feeling kinda dizzy cause he sucked up all that air. He better keep his guard up because she might take a swing.
And you know what else I prepared for? I prepared to be president. And I think that's a good thing.
Wait a minute, did you just hand him his ass and quote Martha Stewart? Yes, bitch. Excuse me, I mean, secretary bitch.
Super calculated adolescent braggadocious. If you hate both nominees, remember he's the grossest. Meanwhile, look at Jill and Gary sipping on mimosas. Super callous, fragile, egocentric braggadocious.
I think I did a good job.
Super callous, fragile, egocentric braggadocious.
Okay, you need to stop that.
But, of course, people didn't like Clinton either. Most people didn't vote. And those who did vote gave Trump a least electoral majority, though not a majority and not a plurality of the popular vote, but that's not how it works in the American political system. Anyway, fun songs, not so fun an outcome, and I guess the real issues are the ones underneath that both Clinton and Trump agree on, which have to do with continuing the war-making machine, continuing the imperialism, continuing the disparity of wealth, continuing the favors to the rich, and that is something that we got to find ways to fight back. And I think you have to fight back issue by issue. One of the issues I work on has to do with civil rights here in Santa Cruz around homeless folks, and that's what this program is largely about. So here next is a brief clip from Brent Adams, who does the Day and Night Storage Program and the Warming Center. He's often circumspect in some of his comments because he is, as he calls himself, a service provider. In my mind, he packs a tad too closely, or tries to, with the hope that he'll get some kind of acknowledgement and even financial support for the real services he does provide, specifically shelter and in terms of the warming center, when that's open, which is extremely limited, but it's real. He's the overflow for the for most homeless people, non-existent winter shelter at the during the months from October through April. And, of course, there's even less shelter the rest of the year. And as we've seen recently, the city council is now colluding with the sheriffs, the Parks and Rec, and Take Back Santa Cruz-type groups to drive the homeless visibly away from the main beach, where they have, up to now, somewhat rather cleanly and without much muss and fuss and public problems, other than that stirred up by the Urinal, which is to say the Sentinel, and some other news media, and the Lynn Renshaw, Donna Myers, Martine Watkins, Cynthia Matthews side of things, or if you will, the Martine Burnell, Andy Mills, Tony Elliott side of things. These are the city officials who pressed successfully for the curfew on the main beach, the first ever curfew on the main beach, at least in my memory. And I may be giving that more coverage on Sunday when I've got more time and when I'm not up against a time deadline, which I am today. But here's some of Brent's thoughts about the CATCH, the committee set up by the city council to, I would say, to bury homeless proposals, distract homeless activists, and fleece the community into believing that there's actually something real happening on the issue, when the real specifics like shelter, ending the police targeting of homeless people, or the laws that, whether police intend it or not, have that effect, opening bathrooms and other services, providing laundry services, allowing private groups to set up campgrounds, what Drew Glover calls transitional campgrounds, what I call survival campgrounds, because that's what most of this outdoor living is about for poor people in Santa Cruz. It's not camping or vacationing, it's surviving. So here's Brent, and we're going to actually hear from him again later in the show, but here he is, sort of a round one. And this conversation I had with Brent was on Monday, the day before the city council's meeting, where there was an important discussion of this main beach, which impacted, depending on how many people you, whoever's estimates that you want to take, 20 to 40 tents on the beach that were likely survival homeless encampment tents. There, at that same afternoon, there was evening, there was a meeting of the CATCH, which was a presentation, which Brent begins by talking about.
One guy, if you recall, on who was brought in, who had a leg problem, you might remember him. He was out there with a sign for a year. And it's just an anecdotal thing that doesn't talk about reducing homelessness in the least bit.
We're talking about this thing tomorrow at 6. What group is throwing it?
Focus Strategies has a website. They're anchored in San Diego. For some reason, this community is really focused on things in San Diego. But this program doesn't show any real success metrics.
It's, you going to this thing, or are you just going to do a critique later?
I'm going to try to go.
And I want to get your whole analysis of it. I doubt I'm going. Are you going to interview video the thing or not?
I mean, I as a homeless service provider, I don't do that in those spaces. I have to represent myself as director of a warming center program, and it becomes inappropriate for me to document or other things that I do. I may if it's ridiculous, but no, I'm going to be a fly on the wall, I guess. Or just, you know, apparently it's a done deal. And they've got, you know, it's about how they're going to use heat funding, and county and city and the mega nonprofits are all working in tandem to gobble up and use all the money and in the way that they want to, with, you know, using this CATCH as a, you know, a finger puppet, and the city council is another finger puppet. That's my take.
Yeah. Well, you know, you're not going to find much argument here.
Yeah. I got your email and your message, and I think I have a. I think it's tomorrow or Wednesday.
I believe it's tomorrow, according to the Sentinel today, I believe.
Yep. 7:30, I guess, at City Council. They'll be talking about the beach thing, so I'll be there presenting that. And then, I produced a report, unbiased, of my experience camping on the beach.
Good.
There's a handout for that, so I'll be talking about that. But also, you know, our need to get ahead of these things. This is the third experience where the city just allowing without any real transitional encampments. We talked about that already. Well, thanks for the call.
Yeah, listen, good luck. And if you feel like it, email me your speech. And if you want me, I'll post it on Indie Bay. So.
That's nice. Okay, cool.
All right.
And that was a lot shorter than I'd expected. But here's a somewhat earlier, not much earlier, I think it was a day or two before, another phone conversation with Brent Adams, which is more substantial and I think you'll find more interesting.
And today is September 8th, 2019. It's Sunday, but I'm doing a kind of an advanced recording here because I have on the line activist Brent Adams, who's both a community observer, a longtime activist himself on a number of issues, a musician, and most recently a worker on issues of storage, showers, laundry. I guess you haven't got a shower going yet, but I think you'd like that if that could happen. Right, day and night storage man?
Yeah, I'm exclusively a grassroots service provider now, and I have some of these, you know, documentation capabilities. Try not to weigh in too much with my opinion, but it's almost nearly impossible.
Well, you called me actually about that opinion because you attended the last you caught the CATCH, so to speak,
On a video.
On video, you mean you saw it later, or you were there? Were you there when?
As you recall, Wes recorded the whole thing.
That's true. Yes, of the Santa
on YouTube,
Monterey County homeless advocates. Right, and it's available.
The YouTube channel is something like John Doe 13.
Right. It's you go to YouTube, then you do the two words John, and then Doe 13K if you want to actually view it.
Yeah.
And I also played some of the. I couldn't stand, frankly, to play the. what I felt was somewhat meaningless bylaw discussion, though some of it was interesting. You probably have some comments about it since you've observed it, and I guess
you're just playing the activist take from the peanut gallery, which is appropriate. But you know what really happened in the meeting, and that was actually really surprising to me, because I'm wondering, you know, first of all, I believe that these are, Susie O'Hara has stacked the deck here with her yes men.
Let's first of all tell folks who Susie O'Hara is and what your previous...
Susie O'Hara is currently, I think the official role now is assistant city manager.
That's
correct.
She's been
promoted to, she took Tina Scholl's job. She was the assistant to the whatever, but... And so she's also, I think, around homelessness, she's kind of the Rainey Mar, she's the kind of city czar around homelessness. Everything that's relating homelessness goes through Susie O'Hara.
I call her the eighth council member, actually.
Yeah, sure. Well, the staff, while that may be true, I think that actually denotes more power of the city council than they actually have, which I believe they have almost no power.
Correct. I tend to agree with you. She actually directs the city council in many ways,
correct,
in my view.
She uses it like a tool.
Yes, that's my belief too, I think. What did you observe at this meeting that particularly, kind of go through it step by step for us as to your concern?
Okay, well, I mean, I was watching it on Fast Play, but what I had noticed was her constantly interjecting while they were working with each other. So it's a multi-member community body, including people like Brooke from who had currently the Downtown Streets team, Serge Cogno, Don Lane, esteemed, and many others who have legitimate voices in the homeless community. They run programs and things like that, or they're just community members like Rafa and Taj. I don't know their last names. But anyway, and others. So they were kind of hammering out the thing that the template that already that they had a previous meeting with the city manager had painstakingly devised, which is a timeline, or what they're going to be, as a three-phase thing. And then as they're kind of, Rafa and Serge had things that they wanted to present numerous times. And then Susie O'Hara came up with her own, what she kept calling her preferences, but put them up on the board everywhere and then handed them out to everyone. And it really kind of defined the process. And then she proposed a subcommittee. And then Brooke was constantly seconding her, and to the point where they wanted to come up with a set of agreements. And then Brooke said, "Well, the subcommittee is going to decide on all this with the staff, and then come back. So anything we decide here is going to be changed anyway." Which we watched a complete neutering of the power of that group right before our eyes. I don't know if you're following me with that.
I think at the second meeting of the group, and this was their second meeting, I know Serge and Rafa were concerned about issues like the Loudoun-Elson bathrooms, which is a small issue, but kind of a weather vane issue for the city, this committee, for the city council, for the community.
Oh, it's a straw dog. There are bathrooms at Depot Park. There are many bathrooms around. When we talk about Loudoun-Elson, it's kind of an activist thing.
Well, let's agree to disagree. I mean, I see that and the fencing of the park. And
what Serge was doing was saying what's more pertinent than the bathrooms at Loudoun-Elson, because there are bathrooms in many places, and what's true is we're not talking about places where there aren't bathrooms, like up here at the head of the levee. I'd like activists to become more aware of
I think that's a good point.
Where people are congregating, and where there are no bathrooms, when you talk about Loudoun-Elson over and over and over, it really kind of shows your hand that you don't really know what's up with homelessness. But what I would like to assert is Serge bringing the pertinent thing, like winter shelter is coming, actually for us to have some agreement within this body to allow council to weigh in. We're going to have to get way ahead of that, and then the subcommittee. So he's like, let's we have to almost start deciding things now. We're starting to see the division on the on this. So anyway, that was interesting for me to see what I'm really calling a kind of a railroading by the staff, by Susie O'Hara. I understand why the city manager is in the room. They're kind of directing, but they're actually giving, you know, setting agenda practically and getting having other people on that.
Let me weigh in with two considerations and for your thoughts on this. One is that the actual specifics that O'Hara talked about as the priorities, I don't remember all of them, but two of them at least was feasibility and also acceptability by the city council. Now, as an activist myself of a somewhat different stripe, working in a different area than you are, I'm concerned with maintaining the truth of a situation and the real needs being expressed, regardless of how its acceptability by the city council. Yeah. And the idea that you are going to kind of fashion something that is acceptable as a primary objective instead of what is needed to let the city council know what they need to do, whether they like it now or not, to me is in a way trying to ratify O'Hara's past decisions in which she informed the community and the courts that there was available space, for example, in the dispersal of the Ross camp. And I know we disagree on a number of issues around the Ross camp, but I think we do agree that there certainly isn't, though there is some empty space in, you know, I was told that there's no empty space in Laurel Street, but there may or may not be empty space at the Coral Street situation now. And there's, of course, nothing at 1220 River. But, you know, that can open up later. And I think either you or I've also heard maybe from Serge or Rafa that there are occasionally and maybe even regularly some vacant spaces, perhaps as you've pointed out, because the summer weather and I guess the backing off of police and rangers up to now in the beach situation, which now may be changed because of Tuesday's city council meeting, which will have passed by the time we play your discussion. But I'm roaming a bit. What I wanted to ask you, though, is regarding O'Hara's sort of assertion of this agenda issues of timeline, and I noticed this even in their packet, feasibility, and the third one, what was it? Acceptability to the city council. What's your reaction to that?
Well, I don't. A lot of that stuff I didn't pay close attention to because I was doing other work and exercising at the same time. What jumped out at me was, you know, something that they're going to be working on in the future. No, feasibility, let's talk about that really quickly. You're the single voice that has brought out through your hammering of Martine Watkins in one of your shows recently. You were just asking her 20 questions, and you had a lightning round at the end there where you kind of broke her down, and she admitted, you know, that she's, you know, there are more staff in the room deciding the agenda than there are council people, and she doesn't really have that much say over it. They kind of bring the party. So if it's acceptability, council and the city manager's determining often what the agenda is going to be, then the whole thing's fixed. That's how I'm seeing it.
Mm-hmm.
Now, there is the process. Let's allow the reality that the council can make their own decisions. They do deliberate, and they have a final vote. That the city manager doesn't really have the thumb on the scale of that vote. But if they're setting the agenda, if they have so much control over the catch, then, you know, it seems like already the fix is in. So that's just kind of how I feel about it. Mm-hmm. One thing that slammed my head was I heard the word storage 3 times in that meeting. Did you hear the word storage?
You know, maybe I tuned out. Maybe I did. Maybe I, when did you hear it? What did you hear?
So she shoehorned it in. You know, they're talking about hygiene. They're talking about showers. They're talking about shelter. They're not being specific around anything around the heap money purchase of the property for the yet as undefined and unvoted on navigation center. It's another community conversation. They talked a lot about siting of encampments. Don Lane's going to work on helping massage the new camping ordinance to allow for transitional encampments. This is something that, you know, I think I was the John the Baptist in this community for many years about sanctuary-type camps, and now it seems to be, you know, a done deal that's going to happen at some point.
Thanks to Susie O'Hara and Don Lane. No, I think we have to give credit to where it's due here.
We're not talking about 180-2020 anymore. We're not talking about permanent supported housing anymore. We're talking about transitional encampments. It's kind of a weird thing. And now I am like outside of the conversation looking in, which is really uncomfortable. But I kept hearing her say, and storage. And nobody, like, what does that mean? You know, we have a storage program that's open for every single person who walks in the door. The community no longer has a need for storage. My fear is, and that's not why I called you, but there is a resting of opportunities from our nonprofit. Warming Center is a basic need, and it always needs to be talked about. Anytime we talk about winter shelter, we have to talk about winter shelter and warming center. And I hope you'll remember to do that, because a winter shelter is always going to have a population cap, a time limit, and very many limitations. You always need a warming center to be discussed in the same sentence, because we pick up everybody else on nights where death can occur.
Mm-hmm.
And that needs to be acknowledged by the city. But when this, anyway, so, but mainly I called it to say how weird it was that Susie O'Hara seemed to have such a deciding factor. And, you know, while Rafa and Serge had some ideas, they were kind of neutered with the fact that they were going to come up with, have a subcommittee meeting that the staff was going to have a big voice in, and then they were going to return and then make some decisions. Another thing that has rubbed me the wrong way, and you may not like hearing this, it's not about you, but kind of like how in the past organizations who propose to speak for the homeless speak for them under a moniker, for instance, like HUF or Conscious in Action, which I think you have a great deal of contact with homelessness. So I've never complained about you speaking for the homeless.
No, I don't speak. I want to say I don't speak for the homeless, because I can't. I'm not homeless.
But we watched a tool in this meeting say that the homeless union advocates for two of these candidates who are going to be on the, which I think, why don't she, I'm like, that's a red flag for me when all of a sudden she's speaking for the homeless union, speaking for the homeless, but it's really just her saying that. There is no union. They didn't vote on which candidates that they would support for the subcommittee. It's just her saying that, using this new model. You know, it's stealing the voice of the people under a moniker that doesn't have any, it didn't have a meeting on that. And she, rather than just saying that she prefers that, I have a real problem when somebody starts speaking for the homeless under a moniker called the Homeless Union, and no one asks any homeless people, nor do they have a vote of the union. So, fuck her.
Mm-hmm. Well, I understand, you know, that you have strong feelings with respect to some of the things she said in the past. And, you know, Alicia...
Her entire behavior around homelessness is just usurping the voice and making it all about her. She's persecuted. She doesn't care about how to do it right. She doesn't care about anything that came before her. And you know this. She doesn't care about any history or anybody else who's doing the good work. Her. That's not about homelessness. It's about fucking her. So anyway, I got to go.
Don't go yet. Or do you have to go?
I got to go.
Okay, well, call back at some point, because we want to do an update, particularly if you can get to city council and speak on the beach curfew and your experiences, because I know you've been living on the beach, or at least you have contact with you.
I spent three nights camping on
the beach. Please come to city council and talk about those issues, although, of course, they won't listen to you much. But
no, the thing is, the question is, where are we at with that right now? Well, I mean, I got 20 seconds for that. I advocate transitional encampments. My voice has been neutered around that currently. They hacked at my Achilles heels, even though I don't have any. I'm not advocating for the beach to continue on like some Ross camp. I'm not one of those. I'm just saying we need to get ahead of these things.
Right, but do you want to see them swept away before there is affordable or acceptable or alternative?
No. I mean, we're always there about the swept away. We need to get ahead of these things and build concepts before these things pop up.
And that's a really...
And with the third...
That's an important distinction you're making, I think. And I also... I was going to suggest to you, Justin Cummings, of course, is always the key vote here, because I think you can get three people, even whether it's transitional campgrounds or, you know, bathroom facilities, or even maybe some decent, I'm not sure how they respond to, you know, giving you the due that you deserve in terms of storage and other facilities, a warming center and so forth. But in this issue, for example, coming up on Tuesday, it's already come up by the time I play this, I think Cummings is the key vote, and he's a big data man. And the idea that they have absolutely no data on this beach curfew ending. They didn't take it to a Parks and Rec commission. They didn't take it to the Catch commission, even the Susie O'Hara-dominated Catch commission. You know, they didn't present any documentation in their staff report is significant, whereas you have some documentation.
I haven't discussed it at all.
Yeah. I mean, you've been down there three nights, you say, and you can give some specific information, and I will be hoping to hear from you at greater length on that when you do have time.
You've read the little report that I made on Facebook?
When was it? I'm not sure.
Yesterday I put it up, maybe 23 photographs. I took a photograph of every tent, most tents.
No, I haven't seen that. I'll have to go look.
I did see somebody shooting up and falling outside their tent.
Mm-hmm.
But I didn't see any syringes around. I saw virtually no litter. Everyone was very kind and unbelievably clean. What's not mentioned is this encampment is way cleaner than regular beach traffic after an afternoon.
Good point. Good point. I'm a fan of a big defender often of homeless people, even in more wretched circumstances where you and I might disagree. But sure. I'm glad that you bring that point up in this particular situation. So,
yeah, it's very tidy. People are really invested in having it go well.
Mm-hmm.
But I, again, don't think this is an appropriate space, definitely not appropriate timing, and I think we need a transitional encampment, at least one in this community as a pilot camp that we don't have one yet. There's a lot to talk about that, because Drew, they made a good point. He did come out of the gate too fast with the Delaware RV thing, and then they fucked us over with the parking lot 24. It's almost, to really study this, you can just see how, there's a good possibility and the city manager just has a really great strategy of how to kill these things. And now they're going to use this catch as a puppet.
Cat's paw. Or a catch paw in this case.
Yeah. Anyway, thank you.
Yeah, call back. Take care, man.
Yes.
See.
And that was the first of a number of psychiatric songs from decades ago, which I just dug out of the closet. Here's another one.
I'm out when they come, apparently normal, quick to smile and slow to peek. But I have a little quirk, a pattern, so to speak. I rarely ever find a job, I never finish my work. I'm an affable kind of a slob, a highly disorganized person, sort of a jerk. I've got the will to fail, the will to fail. I have talents that I never use, I try to win, but I love to lose, because I've got the will to fail. It's such a thrill to fail. I've a backward kind of basic need. I get my kicks when I don't succeed, because I've got the will to fail. I seem to make an effort, but I never do connect. And while I'm very irrational, I'm certain if ever practically never current, because I've got the will to fail. The will to fail. secretly am enjoying myself, but slowly I'm destroying myself. I think I got a tiger on the tail. Because I've got the will to fail.
So we go now to the time right before the Santa Cruz City Council's closed session, which happened at 12:30 on Tuesday. Now, this, of course, is the session where you can't go in. The City Council is forbidden to talk to the public about it. I think it's not only kind of ridiculous in some ways, but also it kind of gags public servants with respect to important issues and excludes public comment. And the City Council's city attorney, or actually the City Council minority's city attorney, the Myers, Matthews, Watkins city attorney, as I view it, as I view Tony Condotti's performance in the last few months, he has essentially been allowing matters that should be out in public, like the issue of the ordinances that criminalize the homeless, to be thrown into City Council even after they were raised in open session and a report was guaranteed. That report instead was thrown into the closed session with the connivance of Justin Cummings and the council minority, which has become a majority with Cynthia Matthews acting, as I've said before, sort of the shadow mayor, and Watkins leading the band with a pert smile. Anyway, this is Keith talking to me about another incident that happened an hour or two before the closed session, which you're also going to hear Keith and myself talk about the Desiree Quintero case, which is the Ross Camp case that told the city stop going after homeless people when you have no place to put them, and actually stalled them for a week, and is still demanding that they go into a settlement conference, which this was probably about that, though we don't know what it was about. Drew Glover and others have refused to talk about it, even to say what even in the most general terms, what the specifics are. If you ask them what the legal case is, even if it's about information that you wouldn't get in the closed session, wasn't even talked about in the closed session, they clam up. At least Glover did at his Friday conference when we asked about I guess another case inside the closed session, not what they were saying about it, not what they intended to say about it, not what has been said about it, but what the case was in terms of its general public knowledge, which is public information, Drew. Get a clue. Anyway, here's Keith and I talking, and you're hearing also our presentation to the City Council.
Okay, well, today is the 10th of September, and it's around 12:20, and I'm talking Keith with Food Not Bombs. And Keith, we're here in the City Council chambers, but you were outside earlier. You were telling me around 10:30, and you observed a number of police officers and Tony, an individual who was sleeping here with his possessions?
Well, yeah, I was actually going to park here and then go work at Tabby Cat, but I saw so many police vehicles around City Hall, I thought I'd check it out. So came over here, and Portuguese Tony was handcuffed, sitting on the ground next to the City Hall, and all of his bike and all of his equipment and everything was all strewn around. And he was like, had all these cops guarding him, six cops surrounding him, and he was being Tony's typical self, which was very pleasant. He knows his rights, so he's like, and the cops are starting to paw through his stuff. He says, you don't have a search warrant. You can't be pawed through that stuff. I won't, you know, but he's very salty language. And he forced them verbally to let go of his stuff and to stop standing on it and stuff.
And again, you say, how many police officers were there?
It was six police officers, at least six police officers, and then several city employees.
How many police cars did you see outside?
And I think I saw maybe even six cop cars, yeah.
So was there a raging Portuguese mafia behind them that necessitated the use of all these police officers?
I don't know what they're doing with Tony. It's really crazy. But funny,
Tony. So there was nobody but Tony and the police and the city employees.
Yeah, that was all that was here. And then Tony was saying that he was not on probation anymore, that ended in July, and that he'd been getting just tickets recently for smoking, and that was in building a cook fire, and that's all that he'd been getting ticketed for, and they should unhandcuff him immediately and everything. And then kept telling me to stay back. I photographed what I could. Mm-hmm.
Did you say what the charge was?
No, then at the end, all the cops disappeared for a while and left all of Tony's stuff there. And then when a couple of them came back, they took pictures of this bent-up Trader Joe's red basket that had been apparently tied on the back. And they said, yeah, we got to get this for evidence for stolen property. He stole this property. Mm-hmm. And that was in my conversation with the police, that was the only thing. It seemed like Tom, the janitor that manages this facility, had some kind of altercation with him, which is to be expected because, you know, Tony doesn't like to get pushed around about anything, and probably mouthed off at him, and which is his right, considering he's getting kind of sick of being harassed. My experience of spending a lot of time with Tony, and apparently I got the impression because there was a clipboard that Tony was that Tom was doing something with Tony. Yay! And then eventually they did come back and take all of his belongings and put him in the back of a police pickup truck. So that was that. And
did he say anything to you of any note? Did he ask for any help, or did you have any communication with him?
No, he didn't talk to me. He was just mostly angry that he was handcuffed, and he kept demanding that his handcuffs be taken off.
Were they ever taken off?
No, he was taken to a vehicle and driven away.
And again, how many vehicles did you say you saw?
I'd say there's probably six police vehicles here, maybe only five, but definitely six cops.
Any high-ranking officers?
There was like a sergeant type person. Everybody, all the cops knew my name, kept telling me to move. I didn't know some
of
the cops.
Did they ask for your autograph, perhaps?
No, they didn't do that. That was all happening. And, it was kind of a crazy, kind of sad, you know, that they're harassing him. They took all of his belongings and put it in the back of a police pickup truck, and except for the food, they made a big deal. Well, we're not going to save his food, and I was like, well, I hope you, make sure that Tony gets all of his property back when he gets out of jail, and I've got photos of all of it. So, and he's like, well, we're not saving, and he had like one bag of food and a big box of sugar, basically, threw that away, and. He did. There was a hatchet there, which is legal, but Tony's hatchet and marijuana pipe.
Yeah, no, I missed the meeting.
Which is the legal. Usual suspicious items, of course. What are you here for today, Keith?
And I'm here because the current session, there's a closed session about the Ross Camp lawsuit, and I'm here to speak about that. And my perspective is the city, Susie O'Hare from the city manager's office and other city officials claimed there'd be enough shelter for everyone on the eviction of the people from Ross Camp, and they told this in federal court under oath. And then, and we had argued, the plaintiffs, that there would not be places for everybody to be sheltered, and that the people would move into the doorways, and that is exactly what happened.
And I guess you're here because this, the lawsuit is on the closed agenda. That's why I'm here, so I'm assuming that's why you're here.
Yeah.
And you're representing an organization?
Food Not Bombs.
And I'm representing HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. I can't think of anything else to ask you. You want to ask yourself any questions?
No. Although the curfew thing, I'll be here for that later on. And then an interesting story I just saw posted was that the city of Sacramento and the county have joined in a brief to oppose the Ninth Circuit Court of Appeals ruling on Martin v. Boise. And what is interesting, most interesting about that, is that the mayor of Sacramento is also co-chair of the California Task Force on Homelessness, and here they're aggressively fighting against the Boise decision. And he also, at the same time, is advocating this policy called Right to Shelter.
And for those, I would imagine there are few, at least of the regular listeners, who don't know what Boise versus Martin is. That's the court decision a year ago at the federal level covering 9 states, or is it 10? I'm not sure. But it's certainly all of California, that in essence says if you haven't got adequate shelter for homeless people, you can't issue them camping tickets. And also has another category of tickets, but that is that essentially involves being in a public place with nowhere else to go and requiring the to be able to rest. Santa Cruz, of course, though it no longer is enforcing so vigorously its camping ordinance, is going after homeless people under a lot of other ordinances. And, in fact, on Tuesday night, some hours later after this discussion, after this hearing that, well, this brief open mic on the issue of 2-minute open mic on the issue of the lawsuit further increased the kind of tightened the noose around the neck of homeless people by driving them off the main beach at night with a curfew. But I'm going to be probably going into that at greater length on Sunday if I pull up the energy, inspiration, and stomach for it.
Which will make it obligatory for anybody living outside to go into a facility provided by the state. And this is something he's pushing very hard right now.
And again, who is this we're talking about?
And this would be the mayor of Sacramento, who is also the co-chair of the governor's task force on homelessness for the state of California.
And on homeless incarceration.
Yeah, so what it looks like is... He's been quoted repeatedly and in the media, and also wrote an op-ed piece that was essentially saying that there's no right to live outside, that you must live in a facility provided either by the state or by yourself, because you can own a house, pay for a hotel, or you have your tenant in somebody's place.
Well, thank you, Keith.
Thank you very much.
The city council is assembled for closed session, and the mayor is about to.
Good afternoon, and welcome to our 12:30 p.m. public portion of closed session of the September 10th, 2019 meeting of the Santa Cruz City Council. In this part of the meeting, the council will receive public testimony. Thereafter, council members will move to the courtyard conference room for our closed session. I would like to ask our clerk to please call the roll.
Thank you, Mayor. Councilmember Crone.
Here.
Glover.
Here.
Myers is absent today. Brown.
Here.
Matthews.
Here.
Vice Mayor Cummings.
Here.
And Mayor Watkins.
Here. Are there any members of the public who would like to speak to items on closed session? I see at least maybe one, if not more. Okay, so you'll have up to 2 minutes.
Yeah, we're also hoping that Alicia will come from the Union of the Homeless. But we're plaintiffs in the case that you'll be discussing. The Susie O'Hara and other city officials testified under oath in federal court that there is plenty of shelter for the people at Ross Camp to when there was a vote here to evict the people from Ross Camp. And
I think everybody here would agree that those people did not have adequate shelter and are in fact found living in the doorways in the bushes and now it, on the main beach in Santa Cruz. So we are here to continue to offer the settlements that we've been attempting to settle with the city. And we've provided, and you have this points here that we've given to the city attorney. These are similar to the same arguments we attempted to make twice at in settlement hearings at federal court. And we hope that you will enact on these provisions here. And one of them is a city would provide a comprehensive list of all vacant city-owned and city-controlled and tax-delinquent properties. And this would be useful for finding ways to house people. That that the city will designate a transitional homeless encampment and safe RV and vehicle lot to be open no later than the start of the new year. And you can go through and read the rest of them. And Alicia wanted me to make sure that, you know, when Justin voted to shut down Ross Camp, he wanted to see if the city staff was actually being honest about all the potential shelter spaces. And as we know, there were 60 spaces ultimately at 1220 River Street, which are desperately in need of showers and fresh water. And so that was the only, ultimately the only space that was provided was for 60 of the several hundred residents of Ross Camp. Thank you very much.
Other speakers?
And that was only the first of a number of numerous points which we presented to the city attorney, gosh, 2 or 3 weeks ago, right after the court hearing. And he declined to give us any kind of indication, even wanted to get into a settlement conference, though that in essence is what Judge Davala, the federal judge, instructed us or strongly advised us to do before coming back to have a final disposition of the case. In fact, the case, in my view, is likely to be dismissed somewhat for technical reasons, somewhat because the Ross Camp itself has been dispersed. And in a way, it's kind of the issue is moot, but the damages done by that are not moot. They're continuing to the people who did have tenancy in the Ross Camp. And that could be the subject of a second lawsuit. And I'm not sanguine about the possibilities of that happening because of the limitations that the homeless activists here in Santa Cruz have. And I'm speaking candidly and perhaps out of school here by doing so, because it's nice to put up a bold front and say this is all likely to happen. And I think I even say something like that to the city council, because it's possible. We do have a very determined legal counsel, Anthony Prince, but he doesn't really have the time to do this himself. But he is training, and the National Union of the Homeless and the California chapter of the Union of the Homeless, which right now is largely consisting of a few dedicated activists and a hopes for a future get-together following up on a Washington, D.C. conference and New York conference. I just don't want to promise homeless folks there's going to be sure and swift justice or even likely and lengthy justice. It's always a struggle and really ultimately falls on the shoulders of homeless people themselves, rather than even the few folks who are taking a particular interest and have a particular even access to the resources to do more than your average person who's running around trying to make sure his property hasn't been taken. He can have a place set up for the night and get down to, you know, to get the survival check he needs to get through the month, or she needs to get through the month. So it's, I just want to have that said, but nonetheless, I will, I think, be reading to you some of the settlement demands we made, which we think are important, reasonable, unlikely to be even considered, much less granted, but important nonetheless. But here's a little more from this hearing before what we get to that.
Councilmembers, yeah, you have a copy of this, which I heard you look at closely. We've not been able to get the city attorney until, what, yesterday. We even agreed any kind of meeting. What I present to you is on behalf of a HUF, Homeless United for Friendship and Freedom. We can no longer reach some of our members after the destruction of the Ross camp. And I joined with Food Not Bombs on these 13 points. They're fundamentally much-needed reforms, long stalled here, instead of damage claims for individual plaintiffs. I mean, if that's really what we want. We seek the obvious: fair treatment until shelter is available, shelter, storage, potable water, laundry access. Your city attorney first went to court with false claims about available shelter. This drove Ross Camp residents out into the neighborhoods, the Greenbelt, the downtown, and as you just heard and as you've seen, the main beach. Away from the sanitary facilities, away from community support, away from public visibility. This settlement is intended to forestall this problem in the future. And the future is upon us. Main Beach encampments are now proposed for the whack-a-mole homeless removal plan tonight. Ross Camp refugees being back on the beach, and they are back on the beach, this is where some of them were last year at this time, with nowhere to go. Lead plaintiff Desiree Quintero was there on the beach last week. Are you looking for a future lawsuit as this wretched process repeats itself? I don't think so. When you don't negotiate reasonably with people in serious need, they do what they need to do. In Santa Cruz, this means they sleep where they must, they shit where they must, and they sue when they must. We've given you 13 concerns. Present yours, and let's talk.
Are there any other members of the committee who want to address the council?
And the band played on. The actual specifics that we presented the council with was: the city will designate a transitional homeless encampment in the safe RV and vehicle lot to be open no later than the start of the new year. And this is also what Keith said. The city will provide a comprehensive list of all vacant city-owned, city-controlled, and tax-delinquent properties, including all individual vacant units, rooms, and other appropriate spaces for human habitation therein, and work collaboratively with representatives of the plaintiffs in assessing the physical status of same for the purpose of immediately housing those displaced from Ross Camp who have not been otherwise provided adequate indoor shelter. The city will fund a full study the extent of homelessness, in which will include those living on the streets, in encampments, shelters, and any other structure or circumstance unfit for human habitation, homeless students, individual families doubling and tripling up, etc. In conducting such a study, the city will utilize the guidelines provided by the National Law Center on Homelessness and Poverty in its 2017 report on point-in-time surveys. The city shall appoint to its Community Advisory Committee on Homelessness, that's the CATCH, 3 representatives chosen by plaintiffs who shall function as full members of the CATCH. At the end of the planned termination of the CATCH in spring-summer 2020, the designated plaintiffs' reps shall continue to meet on a weekly basis with the appropriate officials of the City of Santa Cruz for the purpose of discussing ongoing issues pertaining to homelessness in Santa Cruz. And here, that's actually, those were the first 4 points. The 5th point is: with regard to all shelters currently operating in Santa Cruz, either directly by the city or by third parties contracted for that purpose, the city shall agree to the following. A. Ensure that accurate and timely updated information regarding shelter availability, transportation to, rule, and restrictions pertaining to residents, and nightly vacancy rates and the like are clearly posted online at a designated website and at appropriate locations in various parts of the city by a city employee. B. Organize a town hall-style meeting of those currently residing at the 1220 River Street facility and all other city-run or city-sanctioned shelters, in which representatives of the plaintiffs shall be permitted to participate and at which appropriate representatives of the city shall be present for the purpose of hearing directly from, documenting, and addressing the concerns of the residents therein. C. Make available showers, laundry facilities, and fresh drinking water at 1220 River Street Camp and to the unsheltered homeless population citywide. D. Provide people staying at all shelters the ability to attend evening events without fear of being denied access to the shelter after the meeting. E. Provide phone and computer charging stations at various locations throughout the city, including Loudoun Nelson or London Nelson, to be accessed when the facility is open. 6. Provide storage space in addition to Brent Adams' program. 7. declare a moratorium on enforcement of ordinances that are shown to unduly impact homeless folks that have little to do with health and safety, such as obstructing the sidewalk, being in a park after dark, being in a closed area, no trespassing on public property. 8. Restore immediately porta potties removed at the Ross camp, as a similar number of homeless people, if not more, are now on the streets and otherwise unable to access necessary sanitary facilities. Open 5 toilets per 100 unhoused people, including providing access to the Loudoun Nelson restrooms by sharing the key code to all who request it. 9. Provide a permit process for local companies and organizations to place portable toilets on public or private property. 10. Provide tents, blankets, food, an expanded number of laundry and hotel vouchers until such time as housing is made available. More closely monitor the seizure of tents and homeless property as abandoned. Expand hours for reclaiming property, particularly survival gear. 11. Dismiss all past camping ban tickets, as well as citations for violations of other ordinances, to the extent the violations derived from the impossibility of the person cited to find adequate indoor shelter. 12. Direct the police chief to decline issuing sticker warnings on RVs under the 72-hour law unless at least 48 hours or more have elapsed. Adopt the proposed state law's delay on any towing or booting of vehicles. Adopt the proposed state legislation on no tows for expired registration. And finally, direct the police chief to make a public statement that vigilantism, violence, harassment, acts, threats of, or solicitations for criminal acts against the homeless will not be tolerated in the city of Santa Cruz. Defendant Take Back Santa Cruz shall strictly monitor its website so as to warn its followers daily and block postings in which vigilantism, violence, harassment, acts against and solicitation, either direct or indirect, for the same against the homeless are advocated. And these, well, there are more than 13 points, but I've got 13 numbers here, are the settlement proposals we presented to the city attorney, which they are refusing so far to even discuss, though I presume that some of that was discussed at the closed session, which none of the council members have seen fit to advise us of or to advise Attorney Anthony Prince of, who's the attorney for the California Homeless Union. The rest of us are all representing ourselves, but he's also advising us in terms of assisting us in getting this done, but doesn't have the time and resources to actually take on each of these cases individually. And I'm going to end this broadcast early because my time is running out. Here's a song in honor of all those devoted people who keep going to shitty council meetings, as I call the city council, in spite of the apparent futility, some would say imbecility or insanity, of doing so. And it's dedicated to Mayor Watkins, Martine Bernal, and I'm throwing in, just for consideration, Vice Mayor Justin Cummings.
The touch of your lips, dear, but much more for the touch of your whips, dear. You can raise welts like nobody else as we dance to the masochism tango. Say our love is a flame, not an ember. Say it's me that you want to dismember. Blacken my eye, set fire to my tie as we dance to the masochism tango. At your command, before you here I stand. My heart is in my hand. Yes. It's here that I must be. My heart entreats, just hear those savage beats, and go put on your cleats, and come and trample me. Your heart heart is hard as stone or mahogany. That's why I'm in such exquisite agony. My soul is on fire, it's aflame with desire, which is why I perspire when we tango. You caught my nose in your left castanet, love. I can feel the pain yet, love. Every time I hear drums, and I envy the rose that you held in your teeth, love, with the thorns underneath, love, sticking into your gums. Your eyes cast a spell that bewitches. The last time I needed 20 stitches to sew up the gash you made with your lash as we danced to the masochism tango. Bash in my brain and make me scream with pain, then kick me once again and say we'll never part. I know too well I'm underneath your spell. So, darling, if you smell something burning, it's my heart. Won't you take your cigarette from its holder and burn your initials in my shoulder? Fracture my spine and swear that you're mine as we dance to the massacre.